You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast at savage.love.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
I'm a little pressed for time today. I am a busy working mom every day of the week. Me and Alabama Senator Katie Britt have that in common. But this week, I'm a little extra pressed, a little extra busy. You see, I'm leaving on a jet plane today. I know when I'll be back again with you next week, right here on the Lovecast. But this week, I've been so busy packing and trying to find my passport that I ran out of time to come up with an intro for the show. So I have decided to avail myself of the latest AI technology, which is, of course, artificial intelligence, going to greatly simplify all of our lives and create lots of jobs, or it's going to lead to the extinction of the human race. There's a non-trivial chance of that, according to scientists working on AI. Anyway, hoping it didn't trigger an extinction-level event somehow through some crazy butterfly effect, I typed this prompt into ChatGPT. Write an intro for a sex and relationship podcast in the style of Dan Savage's intros for his sex and relationship podcast, The Savage Lovecast. And now, here for you is that intro, the intro ChatGPT wrote for this week's show. Background music fades in. This is literally what it says. Background music fades in, smooth, sultry jazz. So, Nancy, can we get some smooth, sultry jazz behind me here? The chatbot wants something smooth, something sultry. And now, the intro. Welcome, sexy listeners, to another tantalizing episode of Podcast Name Here, where we dive deep into the spicy world of sex and relationships. I am your host, Your Name Here, your guide through the labyrinth of lust, love, and everything in between. Now, folks, we've got a sizzling lineup for you today. We'll be delving into the juiciest topics, from navigating the rocky shores of modern dating to exploring the steamy depths of sexual exploration. So grab your favorite beverage, cozy up in your favorite spot, and let's embark on this sensual journey together. But before we delve into the hot and heavy, let's take a moment to appreciate the beauty of sexual diversity. Whether you're straight, gay, bi, pan, poly, or anything else under the sun, you are welcome here because, my darlings, love knows no bounds and pleasure comes in all shapes, sizes, and orientations. And remember, folks, the key to great sex is not just what happens between the sheets, but what happens between your ears. That's right. I'm talking about the power of the mind in the bedroom. From erotic fantasies to dirty talk, our brains are the ultimate aphrodisiacs. But let's not forget about the flip side of the coin, sexual health. From STI prevention to contraceptive options, taking care of your sexual well-being is paramount in this day and age. So, my darlings, knowledge is power, especially when it comes to our bodies and our pleasures. So let's shatter those taboos and have an open, honest conversation about sexual health on this week's Podcast Name Here. Okay, sorry, Dan here, I'm back, and I apologize, but we learned something today, something important. Same thing we learned back in October of last year when I asked ChatGPT to write my sex advice column for me, Savage Love, and it couldn't do it. So artificial intelligence may wind up being an extinction level event for humanity, but for now, at least, the advice columnists and advice podcasters are safe. All right, coming up on today's show on the micro, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, and our guest this week is Raina Cohen, author of the new book, The Other Significant Others, an examination of friendship and the role friends play in our lives and why we don't give those relationships respect they deserve. Raina Cohen, The Other Significant Others, that's on the micro and the magnum, a little bit on the micro, all of it on the magnum. If you want to hear the entire show and my entire interview with Raina Cohen, become a Savage Lovecast Magnum sub. Become one of my subs now at savage.love. Also this week for Magnum subs, Thursday, a new sex and politics drops. Rob Henderson, author of Troubled, a memoir of foster care, family, and social class, joins me to talk about his new book. We talk about luxury beliefs. That's a concept that Rob Henderson came up with, and monogamy and non-monogamy, and how non-monogamy, at least in Rob's view, counts as a luxury belief that is doing harm to the working class. That drops on Thursday, New Sex and Politics with Rob Henderson. All right, let's get to this week's show. Let's get to that first cue.
This episode of The Lovecast is brought to you by the good folks at Squarespace. They make it easy to build a beautiful website, blog, or online store. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
This episode of The Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Foria. Foria crafts 100% all-natural sexual wellness products so you can experience deeper intimacy and transcendent moments of sexual pleasure solo or with your partner or partners. Get 20% off your first order by visiting foriawellness.com/savage. That's foriawellness.com/savage. Revamp your sex life with Liberator, makers of sex positioning pillows, shapes, and furniture that amp up passion and enable and improve intimacy. Right now, you can save 40% off their best-selling wedge ramp combo using promo code SAVAGE. Liberator, the ultimate bedroom adventure gear.
Hey, Dan. I am a 46-year-old straight heterosexual woman in a relationship for 6 months now with a 48-year-old, what I hope is straight heterosexual male. So we've been dating for 6 months, and pretty early on to the relationship, he revealed to me that he enjoys sucking cock, and he also enjoys anal play, and that he has a sex machine that he has used to fuck himself in the ass with while he's alone. He's been divorced for about 10 years now, as have I, and he hasn't really had any significant relationships in that period. He chalks it up to having two kids and just not having the time. We used to work together, so we've known each other from the past and recently reconnected over a dating app. Now, he's brought up the sucking cock a couple times, and he's brought up having a threesome with me and another man a couple times. He and I also had one night a couple months ago where we used his sex machine. He showed it to me, and he used it to fuck himself in the ass while we were making out and I was playing with his balls. He really seemed to enjoy the anal play, which is fine. I get that. That's normal for guys to like that. The thing I'm hung up on is lately he's begun to show less interest in having sex with me. And when I bring up sex and my needs and wanting to have sex with him, he asks me questions like, "Aren't you in love with my mind? Do you only want me for sex?" and things of that nature. Now, given the fact that he has told me he likes to suck cock and he really seems to enjoy getting fucked in the ass, I'm starting to wonder if he might actually be gay and just in denial.
All right. There are definitely straight guys out there who enjoy anal penetration. There are definitely straight guys out there who like to get pegged and are not above sucking the dildo, getting on their knees, sucking that fake cock before it is used to pound them flat. This guy, though, gay or not, first of all, does it matter? He's not meeting your sexual needs. He's already begun to kind of attempt to edit and shut you down and make weird accusations about you being sex obsessed because you would like to have sex with your designated sex partner, with the man that you are dating. That is not an unrealistic expectation that reduces him to a sex object. That is a reasonable expectation of your romantic and sexual partner, and one that he is clearly telegraphing to you he is not all that interested in meeting. He would rather suck a dildo. He would rather get fucked by his fuck machine while you cup his balls, thank you for your service, and manipulate you into having an MMF three-way with him where he can have sex with a man, but you're there. Your presence is required to essentially pussy wash, a little like pink washing, but with pussy wash that encounter. So it seems less gay to him in his head. at the very least, this guy is bi. But the real problem here is this guy is not meeting your reasonable sexual needs. This guy is guilting and shaming you for having reasonable sexual needs. And he is completely obsessed with dick. Can somebody be straight, identified, and obsessed with dick? Yeah, yeah. That person can also be a twisted closet case. Can somebody be bi and obsessed with dick and into women and really aroused at the thought of an MMF threesome where all of his favorite things, boobs and pussy and dick and ass, are right there? Yeah, that can definitely be a thing that a guy can be. Is that a thing this guy is? I don't know. And I don't think it matters, because what this guy is incapable of meeting your sexual needs or having an honest conversation with you about who he is, what he wants, and what's possible for you two together as a couple. So you had a nice run there. You had 6 months with this guy. Get the fuck out. Break the fuck up. End this relationship. Tell him that you're obviously not everything he needs and you don't think you're a match. Not because he wants to suck a dick. You're clearly down to watch the guy that you are dating and maybe even a guy you fell in love with suck a dick. But you're not down to be with somebody who neglects you and prioritizes or centers all of their sexual desires and wants to keep you around for what? Window dressing and companionship? Not what you want out of your committed romantic relationship with your romantic partner. You want that person to wanna fuck you too, not just wanna suck all the dicks that aren't in the room.
Hi, Dan. My husband of 24 years and I have been monogamish our entire time together. Like you, I'm a survivor of growing up Catholic. My husband grew up in a strict Baptist religion where boys and girls couldn't even swim together. He loves to joke about what that did to him. I say all this knowing that religion has always colored my views of sex. We first met in a chat room in 1996. I was under the naive impression that monogamy was all that I wanted in a relationship. We had our first threesome on vacation our first year together, and for many years we continued using vacation as a time to play, but always together. I began to be depressed at the thought of returning home to vanilla sex. I can count on one hand the number of times he has ever tried to even have anal sex with me over the 24 years, and the times he did were with my strong encouragement. While I would consider myself a bottom, I have actually never successfully allowed anyone else to even try to penetrate me. The last few years, our sex life has been nearly non-existent, except when I would invite a third to join us. My husband will never initiate sex and has a very low sex drive. My sex drive, on the other hand, is high, and I've been satisfied with happy ending massages, non-penetrative sex, help with the apps, and other no-strings-attached meetups. All of this has been under a don't-ask-don't-tell attitude that my husband uses in any aspect of disagreement in our relationship. He handles all issues with sarcasm or proverbial sweeping it under the rug. We now have a 9-year-old son who we've had since birth. Other than the lack of sex, I love him, and he is our family's main provider. He is a great dad, and we have built a strong, chosen family together. I'm ready to form more strong relationships with my play partners, and I'm bored with the drama no strings attached can bring. I'm currently in a master's program in theology to become a hospital chaplain. Surprisingly, the Catholic College is very progressive and they are open to my study of queer theology and sex positivity. It has helped me break free from the trauma Catholicism has ingrained in me. How do I discuss this with him? I'm researching polyamory and I'm reading The Ethical Slut. Isn't that what I'm supposed to do? And I'm calling you, Dan. No matter how hard I try, I can't get past the Catholic guilt of cheating on my husband.
You say that you would like to form relationships with your play partners, kind of bring them in out of the cold because you're bored. Bored with the drama no strings attached sex can bring. Dude, multiple concurrent romantic committed relationships, polyamory, lots of drama and potentially lots of conflict and hurt feelings, and not just your husband's hurt feelings, but hurt feelings of other guys that you date, your hurt feelings. If you begin to date another guy and you form a relationship or an attachment and that guy dumps you, dude, polyamory, non-monogamy, a lot of things. It is not drama-free compared to NSA. Seems to me that you have one of those relatively healthy-ish monogamish relationships. You say that you have a DADT agreement with your husband that allows for you to explore your sexuality without telling and without him asking. And part of DADT that sometimes makes people uncomfortable is it does require some active deceit. If you're not going to tell your partner that you're sleeping with somebody else and you're running out the door to go sleep with somebody else and your partner asks you where you're going, you can't tell them the truth. You're going to have to make something up about a bowling league or whatever. You've been together 24 years. You love your partner. You have a 9-year-old child together. Seems to me that you shouldn't take for granted what has worked up to now. It's not perfect. It's not ideal. It's not everything that you would want in a relationship. You wished your husband had a higher sex drive. You wished your husband fucked you more. You wished your husband was more comfortable with an open relationship as opposed to a DADT style open relationship. But if this is the kind of open relationship, the man you love, who is a good parent and co-parent with you to the child that you love, if this is the kind of openness that he can do, maybe you should take that yes for an answer. Yes, it's not everything that you want, but no one really gets everything that they want out of a relationship, out of a partner, out of a non-monogamous agreement that allows for some outside sexual contact. And you have that in your pocket. You can tell your partner, I wish you were different. I wish you had a higher libido. I wish that sex acts that you seem to enjoy with other people, you enjoyed with me, or we didn't have to have a three-way for these things to happen between us. But you're 24 years into this relationship. Maybe this is just what the relationship is like. You have to let go of what you wish was true about your relationship and what was possible for you and try to see what it is that you have here and how valuable it is. You have a loving husband who is a great co-parent. You have a child that you're raising together. You have a long history together, and you do have a degree of sexual freedom. You have a zone of erotic autonomy that isn't just masturbating to porn alone in a room to experience vicariously some variety. You have the ability to make some things happen for you so long as your husband doesn't have to know about them and your community isn't scandalized. All in all, that seems, while not ideal, pretty fucking good. You can have a conversation with your partner about the way you wish your relationship looked and then see what he says. Plant a seed. Yeah, read The Ethical Slut. Maybe also pick up what they're calling the new Bible of polyamory, Polysecure by Jessica Fern. And you can have a conversation with your husband. But if in the end his answer is the status quo, I am comfortable with what we've been doing for a quarter of a century, and I don't want to make radical changes. All right, then you're going to face a choice between accepting all the good and wonderful things you've got, grieving what you're not going to get in that relationship, or ending that relationship. And as a parent, I think it would be a bad idea to blow this relationship up or end it because you wish your husband was more comfortable having three ways at home and not just insisting they happen on vacation, or you wish you could come home from a date with somebody else and tell your husband about it when he doesn't want to hear about it, or you wish you could invite one of your NSA partners over for Thanksgiving dinner, or whatever it is you fantasize about a poly relationship looking like. You might not be able to have all those things, but you have so many things, including a child with your husband. I think you should focus on what works and what is good, and let go of some of the things that you want and you wish for. But who knows? Maybe you can have a decade from now when your kid is 19 and off to college. That is often when a lot of people in previously monogamous or polyamorous relationships or monogamous ones with DADT, one of the cliches of organized swinging and sex parties and the kind of sexual adventures a lot of couples go on later in life is that that happened for them after their kid was grown and moved out of the house. So you can live, you can grieve what you don't have for right now, but you can still live in hope. Here at Savage Lovecast Industries, we're all about spicing up your sex life and strengthening relationships, and Liberator Sexy Furniture can help get you there. For two decades, Liberator has been leading a sexual revolution, freeing couples from the mundane with their epic shapes and furniture. From the iconic wedge ramp combo to the S-Love lounger, the Bonbon toy mount, and the tantalizing fascinator throw, Liberator has something for every desire. Made right here in the U.S. from top-notch materials like furniture-grade foam, plush microfiber, and premium leather, Liberator products are built to last, because when it comes to pleasure, why settle for anything less? Liberator makes two bondage collections, the edgy black label and the brand new Valkyrie edition with removable Velcro cuff fasteners. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just dipping your toes into the world of BDSM, Liberator has you tied and tethered. Now, for our listeners, Liberator is offering 40% off their best-selling wedge ramp combo. Just use promo code SAVAGE at checkout. With Liberator, you can transform your sex life into a thrilling adventure. With Liberator, you can defy gravity. Head over to Liberator.com now and use the promo code SAVAGE to ignite the passion and make your wildest fantasies a reality. Have a spring fling with Liberator.
Hi, Dan, Nancy, and the tech-savvy folks. 40-year-old bi cis female here in an open relationship for the last 5+ years with an awesome 28-year-old dude. I also have 2 preteen kids with an ex who I have a great friendship with. We communicate often, co-parent well, and even share time on some holidays and kids' birthdays. My issue is the awkwardness between the two dudes. They've crossed paths maybe 3 times, and there's been no more than a hi. I haven't talked to my ex much about it, but I can feel his pre-existing social anxiety is through the roof when it comes to my current partner. When I've asked him about it, he says they wouldn't really have much to say to each other. My current partner seems to be putting this more on my ex than himself, and I could only suggest to him that maybe he should go out of his way to be the bigger person and kill him with kindness. My question is there anything I can do to make this less awkward? Like, do I need to arrange a dinner or something to break the ice? I just want them to be comfortable and civil and not as awkward anymore. My current partner seems to really want this too.
You can't force this relationship. Give it time. Because you have kids together with your former partner, there are going to be moments when your former partner and your current partner are just thrown together and are in the same room and have to casually interact. And allowing those moments to occur naturally and for their interactions to unfold without any pressure for them to forge a relationship for what? For your comfort? For the kids' comfort? Yeah, I guess you could argue that it would be good for the kids to see that mom and dad get along with each other's new partners. And so that's an incentive that I'm sure your ex is consciously aware of and is already attempting, the few times that he's interacted with your boyfriend, to come through on, to execute. But don't force it. No dinners. Let's be friends. I think telling your boyfriend, you know, when you're with my husband or my ex-husband, yeah, go out of your way to be solicitous, to be kind. Don't kill him with kindness. Don't hump his leg. But, you know, if he's being a little weird or awkward, let it roll off your back. Be the bigger person. And who knows, maybe 9, 12 more unforced in the flow of everyday life and co-parenting interactions between your ex and your current, a bond or some sort of rapport, if not a bond, will emerge naturally without it being forced. And accept that they may never be friends. You don't mention why your relationship, your marriage, I think, with your ex ended. If you ended the relationship, if that was not what your ex wanted, the presence of your current, especially if you chose this relationship over the relationship that you had been in with your ex, may always be a stone in the shoe of your ex-husband. And he may never be entirely comfortable interacting with your current partner. But I said may never. He will definitely never be comfortable interacting with your current partner if you try to force comfort or force interactions or force them to have a relationship that, I don't know, assuages your guilt or sets you at ease or just makes it more comfortable for everyone when there are family events where your ex and your current both have to be in attendance. Just give it time.
This episode is brought to you by Squarespace, who would like to invite you to take the next step. Your project is cooking along fine, you're building a following, you're starting to sell stuff. But if you don't have a professional-looking, high-functioning website, what are you? You're nothing. That's why you should get Squarespace on board and build yourself a powerful web presence. Here are just a few features that Squarespace is dishing up. Stand out in any inbox with Squarespace email campaigns. Collect email subscribers and convert them into loyal customers. Start with an email template and customize it by applying your brand ingredients like site colors and logo. If your organization collects donations, you can support your cause by gathering contributions with PayPal, Apple Pay, Stripe, and Venmo. Analytics. Gain powerful insight into who's visiting your site, how they're interacting with your content, with their in-depth website analytics tools, including page views, traffic sources, time on site, most read content, audience geography, and more. Wouldn't you like to know this? There's so much more on offer at Squarespace. If you want your website to work well and look beautiful, Squarespace has you covered. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/savage and use the offer code SAVAGE.
We're going to take a quick break from your calls to speak with Raina Cohen, an award-winning producer and editor for NPR's documentary podcast Embedded, and the author of a terrific, but not just terrific, and important new book, The Other Significant Others, Reimagining Life with Friendship at the Center. Hey, Raina, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me to be here to talk.
So the book, as you write in the introduction, is about friends, platonic friends. But platonic friends who become a we, and people are managing to do this, form sort of long-term committed platonic friendships slash relationships, as you say, without scripts, ceremonies, and precious few models to guide them toward long-term platonic commitment. Describe those kinds of friendships. We're not talking about average friendships here, right? We're talking about something more.
I kind of think of these as Olympian level friends. I mean, these are people who have really pushed friendship to its limit. They are doing really the things that we expect of romantic partners. They often own homes together. They might be raising children together. Many will take care of each other through cancer treatments and through old age. And they operate as a unit, which I think is distinct from how a lot of friends treat each other. They are kind of the central part of their lives. And they're often looking toward and building a future together.
We've often discussed on the show, and I've talked about companionate marriages, people who wind up partnered with someone and either the sex wasn't ever really a part of the relationship, it wasn't ever a romantic relationship, although it may have been kind of a friendship, friendly romantic relationship, kind of friend romance, or the sex died and they stayed together and chose to kind of pivot their marriage from what everybody sort of expects, and I think puts a lot of strain and stress on marriage, that it'll always be sexual and always be passionate, to friends now. And married. So the kinds of friendships that you describe in the book, do these ever exist alongside a committed romantic relationship? Can somebody be a we with this kind of significant other, but also have the spouse?
Absolutely. I mean, I write about a number of people who have both these, what you could call platonic partnerships, and they have a marriage or a romantic relationship. And in fact, they think that those relationships make each other stronger, that you're not putting everything on one person, and having more forms of support leads to a better romantic relationship than, you know, what we're told we're supposed to do. And I think the comparison you're making to companionate marriages is so apt, because one of the things that I find kind of curious is that it's really hard for people to wrap their minds around a relationship that is committed but was never sexual. And yet they understand that maybe couples who are in a stage of life where sex isn't as important or has been eliminated is still a marriage that can matter. It doesn't make it illegitimate. But there's something about never having had the sex piece that is really confusing to people when it comes to how it's possible to have commitment.
You open the book by describing something that I think we've all witnessed, but most people don't question, the kind of ritual mutual declaration at a wedding that the person that these two people are about to marry, the bride will say it, the groom will say it, that they're marrying their best friend. And you point out that they usually say this in front of their maid of honor, in front of their best man, who are kind of at that moment being downgraded or dismissed as best friends. When did this creep into marriage? When did marriage become not just your spouse, your romantic partner, perhaps, but your everything? And being married means you're getting all of your emotional and social and sexual needs met by one person. When did that shift happen?
Or in theory, you're having them all met in one person. That's the aspiration anyway. But it's recent. I mean, you know, we're talking about the middle of the 20th century that it becomes common for people to want to and expect to have so much in their spouse. So this is what the psychologist Eli Finkel talks about as the self-expressive marriage. So it's not even that you want romance or sex or love. Like that is not enough alone, that you want somebody who's going to be the person who unlocks the best version of yourself, who is your confidant, the person who's your professional coach, you know, especially when you end up having both partners working, and your best friend. And I guess I have just found it curious also that it's not something that we're questioning. And I just was at a string of weddings where this was happening one after the other. And I'm like, what is the best friend thinking right now? And I actually talked to the person who I write about in the book, who was the best man, who I said was demoted. And he was like, yeah, just didn't even occur to me. And I've talked to other people who have been really hurt in those sorts of situations.
I sometimes think when I hear people say that my husband is my best friend, that's a thing that people are expected to say. And I sometimes think people say that and they don't actually mean it. I get concerned, though, when people say that to me and they actually mean it, because there's a kind of possessiveness being expressed that all of your emotional needs must be met by me. If you go to anybody else to satisfy any of your emotional or social needs, not even talking sexual needs, all respect to the monogamous relationship folks out there, emotional needs. If you go to somebody else with that, that's an emotional affair. That's cheating me of what is mine. And what is supposed to be mine is not just all of you sexually, but all of you emotionally, all your feels. And at the same, I just find it so perverse, because at the same time that we've invested so much of our sense of our success socially, romantically, in the success of our romantic relationships, if we can find one, we've also inflated our expectations to almost impossible heights. We pushed so much onto a spouse while at the same time burdening the spouse with more and more and more at a point in our culture where divorce is not exactly stigmatized the way it used to be, but taken as a kind of negation or failure, even still, like 30 years of me saying a relationship can end, two people can get out of a relationship alive, and you can look at it as a success. And I find this to be in tension, that we expect everything from our spouse and we want these relationships to endure, and people can't seem to get to the more expectations you heap up onto a job or a spouse or a friendship even, the more sort of brittle it becomes.
I think there's sort of math that feels intuitive to people, but is actually pretty damaging, which is essentially that bigger is better. And if you just add more and more onto this relationship, then it indicates that you have a better relationship, and that taking anything away, that's how it's viewed, is that it's, you know, you're divesting from the relationship, you're sapping it of something that it should have, then that means that you aren't possibly as close as maybe you ideally should be. You know, I do want to acknowledge, like, I think it's better that now it's possible for spouses to be friends, to have friendship be or that kind of, you know, amicability and closeness be part of marriages, when not that long ago, women were property of their husbands, if we're talking about heterosexual yes. relationships. And, you know, you had power imbalances that made it impossible to have that kind of closeness, or women's standards were so low that they were like, well, if he doesn't hit me, then I guess it's like an acceptable marriage. So I appreciate that we've moved in a direction toward more equality, which is such an integral part to friendship, because it's mutually chosen in between equals, rather than a spousal relationship, which doesn't necessarily have to have that. But I do think that we've gone too far and maybe overcorrected, and that it's creates a sort of tragic situation where a lot of people feel dissatisfied in their romantic relationships, but don't actually know what the source is. So they might blame themselves, they might blame their partner without actually seeing that the whole structure around them is kind of conspired to make the relationship more difficult.
There's more of this conversation on the Magnum version of the show, the Magnum Savage Lovecast. More guests, more calls, no ads. Subscribe now or give a subscription as a gift at savage.love. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Euphoria, makers of products for amazing sex, the kind of sex you want to have. Intimacy massage oil can help create connection, help you or your partner enter a state of true relaxation, and stir arousal. Skin will be left feeling hydrated, soft, supple, and ready for anything. Remember that first date feeling, the butterflies, the warmth, the electricity of the first time your partner touched you? It all comes flooding back with Intimacy Massage Oil. I also recommend Awaken Arousal Oil. Awaken is like a juicy warm-up that helps get you really turned on, increasing your pleasure and deepening your orgasms with a partner or solo. Awaken uses CBD and warming, sensation-inducing organic botanicals that enhance arousal, sensitivity, pleasure, access to orgasm, and help with any discomfort. Best of all, Awaken just turns you on. So, as your resident sexpert, sexologist, sex haver, sex promoter, you have my permission to try this. Go ahead and treat yourself and your partner. Have your juiciest and deepest sensual experience with a bottle of Euphoria. Euphoria is offering a special deal for our listeners. Get 20% off your first order by visiting euphoriawellness.com/savage or use code SAVAGE at checkout. That's euphoriawellness.com/savage for 20% off your first order. I recommend trying their new massage oil combined with their Awaken Arousal Oil. And yes, you can thank me and you will thank me later.
Hi, Dan. 36, female. I am in a long distance relationship. My partner lives 5,000 miles away. He is a virgin. He is 34 years old and is still a virgin. And he is very sensitive about the whole subject. He's going to be coming and visiting me in a couple months. And obviously, with any relationship, we've talked about sex. But every time it gets brought up, it gets a little awkward. I know he's not upset at me because I've had past experiences. Obviously, I am not a virgin in any way, shape, or form. I try to be very soft-footed when it comes to the situation, and I reassure him as much as I possibly can. I guess the thing is, it's starting to affect me because I feel like whenever I try to talk to him about anything sexual, it upsets him, so I kind of feel like I can't talk about it anymore. I wanted to see if you had any advice or what your take on was it, because I really do care about him, and obviously when we meet, we're going to have sex, so it's going to be like life-changing as sex can be, but until then, I'm just trying to figure out what I can do to be able to talk about sex with him and it not be an awkward situation or make him feel inadequate or any less of a person because he hasn't had sex yet.
Wait a second. So you're having these conversations, you're having a kind of online facilitated relationship, internet facilitated relationship, IFR, with a guy who's a 34-year-old virgin that you can't talk with about sex. He can't have a conversation about sex. And yet your expectation is that when he gets to wherever it is that you are obviously, that's the word you used, obviously going to have sex with him and it is going to be great. That doesn't seem obvious to me. I don't know how you made that leap. Having sex with someone that you can't talk with about sex, that isn't sex that's likely to be passable sex, much less great sex. And my hunch is there's a reason this guy is a virgin at 34 years old that isn't just, you know, bad luck, circumstance. He can't talk about sex. You have to be able to talk about sex. You have to be able to negotiate with a sex partner that you want to have sex with them. You have to be able to put that on the table. And then you have to be able to have a conversation about the sex that it is you want to have and solicit from them, ask them about the sex it is that they want to have. And if you can't have those convos, yeah, maybe if you're opposite sex, you can stumble your way through some PIV default setting intercourse and it won't be awful. But if you're same sex, I mean, you got to have a conversation. You can't rely on those default settings because they do not exist. But even if you're opposite sex and you stumble through it with someone who can't talk about it, maybe it'll be okay. Maybe it'll be shit. It's not going to be great. So you need to let go of that. I would also encourage you to let go of the expectation that anything sexual is going to happen with this person at all. I also, if I were you, wouldn't be surprised if at the last minute this person doesn't show up because of the pressure, the expectations. Yeah. You can keep talking with this person. I would encourage you to keep talking with this person. Maybe you're drawing him out of his shell. Maybe you're doing the Lord's work here. But if you want to fuck somebody, go find somebody else. Go find somebody local. Go find somebody who can use their words and talk with you, not just about whatever it is you like to talk about when you're not talking about sex, but also, crucially, if you are going to have sex with this person, talk with you about sex. I think you should release all expectations that you've, all hopes, all dreams that you've placed upon this guy, whatever relationship it is that you think you have with this guy, and just let it be what it is. An ongoing conversation with somebody who is a virgin at 34 and has some feelings about that and has already demonstrated to you reasons why that might be the case. You don't have to fix him. You don't have to save him. You don't have to solve him. But if you don't want to frustrate yourself and drive yourself crazy, don't try to get semen out of that turnip. Don't try to get blood out of that stone. Go find somebody that you can fuck, who wants to fuck you, and who can talk with you about the fucking they want to do. Somebody who is not a virgin and not this guy.
Hi, Nancy and Dan. I am a 30-year-old married woman. Very happy. We have a great relationship. I have two amazing dogs, and they're girls. And of course, we reward them with, you're a good girl, which also used to be what I was rewarded with. And now it feels weird. I know that sometimes language doesn't necessarily translate into the bedroom. Like, daddy isn't necessarily like your dad, but I'm trying to find something else. It just takes me out of the moment. So where's degradation? And I'm usually a creative person, but I figured I'd ask for your input.
I think I heard you say you're into degradation. Maybe being called the same thing that you call your dogs could be understood as degrading in a way that might be hot. If not, there are lots of other things, if you're into degradation and dirty talk and humiliation, that you could stick on good that could be hot. And these things seem obvious to me. Good slut, good whore, good pervert, good sub. There's lots of good fill in the blanks that you could be if good girl doesn't work for you now because your dogs are the good girls in your life. All right, before I get to this week's listener response calls, I want to share a couple of listener comments about last week's show posted at savage.love. Says DJ Jazzy Jane, to the lesbian with the girlfriend who takes a long time to orgasm, it sounds to me like your girlfriend, like me, struggles being the only point of attention during sex and gets in her head. I suggest alternating between going down on her and something else like grinding or strapping and then back to going down on her. As long as it doesn't feel like going down on her is the one activity she's supposed to climax from, she might get to a point where she just can't hold back anymore. That is some excellent lesbian sex advice, DJ Jazzy Jane. Thank you for that. Actually, it's excellent sex advice, period. Says Peggy S., Dan's answer to can't get laid because math missed the central point. The guy described how all the most attractive women on dating apps are flooded with attention from all the guys. How attractive exactly is can't get laid because math guy, though? I'm guessing his problem is that he's pursuing women who are far more attractive than he is. And a couple of quick comments about our interview with Rob Wild, scrotal infusion enthusiast, says Delta 35, saline injection. Dan said safe. No, safer maybe than silicone, but safe? Crossing the street or taking a bath can kill you. Nothing is entirely safe. And finally, says Thingamajig, Rob Wild's kink is not my kink, and thinking about it makes me wince pretty hard. But he was so well-spoken and thoughtful about it that I enjoyed the conversation anyway. Thank you, Thingamajig. Totally agree. Rob Wild is a charmer. He is the best spokesperson scrotal saline infusion could possibly have. All right. For more listener comments and more of my responses, check out Struggle Session, a weekly bonus column for Magnum subs. Goes up nearly every Thursday at savage.love, and it's where you'll find the Muppet-faced Men of the Week. And now, listener response calls.
Hi, Dan. I was surprised you gave that man who was calling complaining about how the math doesn't math for men in online dating such a pat on the head. Hundreds of men are not pursuing the same one woman on Instagram or on dating apps because of biology. Your biology wants you to find people to fuck and is open to many types of people. Your ego is the thing that's not. If you started looking at profiles for people who you could be attracted to, if you really connected with them, you will have a very different experience. If technology is a problem for you, it's probably the movies and porn that you're watching and then deciding that you are entitled to a woman just as beautiful. The math is not going to math for you until you start listening to your dick instead of your ego, which is what you're actually listening to.
This is a response to the online dating and math call. And I have to say, hearing that call pinged a lot of red flags for me in terms of kind of incel thinking about how dating and attractiveness works. And, you know, this person is talking about attractiveness with this sort of basic conception that it is on some sort of hierarchical scale, that there's the most attractive people, and then there's a pyramid below them with everybody else kind of falling into different niches. And this is, to me, exactly how incels think about dating and human attractiveness and rating people on this sort of 1 to 10 scale. And then thinking about dating pools and people in those dating pools where you go after the top people in the pyramid. And then if they, you don't get them, then you go lower down and lower down. This is just not how human attractiveness works for people in any sense. I mean, everybody is attracted to different things and different people. And there's obviously overlap between different people and what they're attracted to and what they're not. And a lot of that is influenced by our culture. But if you think about dating as this sort of numbers game, where you are trying to get the quote unquote most attractive women, then of course it's going to be a failure because you have failed to conceive of how actual attractiveness works and what this could actually look like for you. And I say this as somebody who was in the online dating world and met women through that and kind of heard stories from them about just how many cretins they met who had this same conception of how attractive this were. If that is your failure, then maybe you need to take a second look at what you're thinking of and how you're conceiving of this process.
As one of those women who has definitely gotten thousands of responses from men online, yes, it can be overwhelming, but I think you missed a critical thing, which is to point out that the problem isn't the math, the problem is you. Men have a tendency to just expect to be able to date the hottest girl regardless of their personal attraction. And this guy's call just reeks of entitlement. I cannot imagine I'm the only woman who noticed this or might have called in about this. I'm not saying that you should message someone that you're truly not attracted to, but try looking at women who are not the ultimate hottest women. Read a bio. See if you have a mutual interest. Message someone who has a nice smile. Get the fuck over yourself. You do not automatically have the right to date the hottest woman just because you think you are a good man. Ugh. I hope you never get laid again.
And we're going to leave it there. We've got three great ways for you to get us your question or comment for a future show. You can record your question or comment at savage.love/askdan, or you can make a voice memo app on your very own phone and email your question or comment to q@savage.love, or you can call our landline and leave us a message at 206-302-2064. Hump is headed to Denver to the Oriental Theater this weekend for a 2-night run. Get your tickets for Hump in Denver at humpfilmfest.com. And you can get on to humpfilmfest.com and see when Hump is coming to a city near you in the United States, Canada, or Europe, Berlin. I am going to be hosting the Hump screenings in Berlin. If you'd like to join me, go get tickets now, humpfilmfest.com. It's also never too early to start making your own film for next year's Hump Film Festival. Go to humpfilmfest.com/submit to find out how you can get your amazing porn into our amazing porn film festival next year. Follow me on Instagram and Threads at Dan Savage. Follow me at Blue Sky at Dan Savage. And you'll still find me on The Bad Place at Fake Dan Savage. Follow Raina Cohen on Threads and Instagram at Raina Cohen. Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech savvy at risk youth and Nancy. We will all be back at you next week with another human being written, no chat GPT, Savage Lovecast. Thank you so much for downloading.